Eric Metaxas here. Please join me in a life-saving mission to set Sudanese slaves free through Christian Solidarity International. Since 1995, CSI has freed more than 100,000 women and children from years of bondage and abuse. Your $250 gift frees, feeds, and heals these captives and sets them on a path to a new life in freedom. Please help us free another slave now. Call 888-253-3522, 888-253-3522, or click the CSI banner at MetaxasTalk.com, MetaxasTalk.com.
Metaxas Show.
It's the show that helps you make sense of things that would otherwise baffle you. Like, for example, why does that one shoe hide in the back of the closet like that?
Is it afraid of you, or does it just need some alone time?
Or maybe it's ashamed of something. Something terrible that only a shoe would be ashamed of.
The answers to these and other questions right here, right now on the Eric Metaxas Show.
And now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. I apologize, right up front, those questions will not be answered in this hour. We will answer other questions, but those questions cannot be answered, I don't think. Maybe we'll try in a future show. Today we're going to tackle something much, much simpler. We're going to tackle the subject of human sexuality. I have in front of me a book by Nate Collins. It's called All But Invisible: Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. It comes with the very high recommendation of a foreword by Wesley Hill. I'm thrilled to speak with Nate Collins. Nate, welcome to this program.
Thank you, Eric. Good to be with you.
You are in Texas?
No, actually, I'm in Kentucky.
You're close enough. Now I'm in New York, and for some reason I thought you were in Texas. You're in Kentucky. Okay. Where should we begin? Because this book is dealing with one of the most important subjects of our time. It just came out a couple of months ago. The issue of what does it mean to be gay and a Christian. These are all big, complicated questions, and people are wrestling with them in various ways. Let's just say, what is your story and what led you to write the book?
For me personally, I identify as gay. I've been open about my story for the past 10 years or so. And for the longest time, I've been just not really satisfied with the kinds of conversations that were happening in conservative evangelical circles on the issue. And I was myself conservative on the issue, but wanted to push the conversation forward in some really productive, hopefully, and fruitful ways.
So when you say you're gay, you mean you're not living a gay lifestyle, but you are and have been same sex attracted.
Sure. Yes. So for me, I use the word gay as just a shorthand reference to an orientation. I don't make any assumptions about what people do or don't do when they say they're gay.
Right.
I'm a conservative evangelical Christian. I happen to be married to a woman. We've been married for 14 years almost, and that's another story, obviously. I do identify as gay because that's my orientation. That's the way that I experience my sexuality, my perception of other people. But I do adhere to a traditional sexual ethic.
You adhere to a traditional biblical sexual ethic, and you said you're mm-hmm. you're married. I actually see here you have three sons. So now, I didn't mean to jump into this, but it just comes up naturally, I guess. Why wouldn't you then describe yourself as bisexual? Because when people use these terms, it always confuses mm-hmm. me, because I think there's such a continuum of sexual attraction that it becomes – it's like if I label myself – I'm straight. Okay, I'm straight. Does that mean that I have never had a flicker of attraction for anything other than, you know, women my age or what? In other words, it is complicated. So one thing we can know is what the Bible says is the ideal and how we're supposed to behave. But it strikes me that we're living at a time where these ideas are out there that, you know, somebody says, well, I'm born this way. And then you realize, well, I know so many people that they, you know, they've had bisexual experiences. That's all over the map and whatever. So, how do you process that, using that word "gay" in that way?
So I think the best place to start is what is orientation, and what does orientation mean? What is it trying to describe? What's the phenomenon it's trying to describe? And a lot of the both secular and Christian psychologists, I would put Mark Yarhouse, probably the foremost Christian psychologist expert on this issue. A lot of them describe orientation as an enduring and fairly set, in a sense, or stable pattern of attraction.
Right.
And so if you frame it like that, then it doesn't, for me and a lot of other people who happen to be in mixed orientation marriages, it doesn't make sense for me to label myself bisexual simply because I find myself attracted to one woman. I can't fathom what it would be like to experience what I do towards my wife with another woman. I can fathom what it would feel like to experience something like that with men.
Okay, but here, now actually you bring reason, up, yeah, I get that, but let me ask you a question, because you've just brought something up that I talk about this now and again. I think if we weren't living in an insane, hyper-sexualized, sick culture, most men would only really have that kind of sexual attraction for their wives. In other words, because we have sexuality outside of marriage and because it's in the culture and it's in everything we read and see, we're really trained to be sexualized in that way. But I think it would be God's will that every man and every woman would only know sexuality, or at least mostly know sexuality, in the context of their spouse. Like, that is really the idea.
Well, I think it's the ideal, and that's certainly what I think we find prescribed in Scripture as far as sexual expression goes. I think that our culture today is extremely highly sexualized. I don't think it's necessarily unique in that regard, though. I think that cultures have been highly sexualized in lots of different ways throughout history. So for that, in that way, I would say that, I think that people in lots of cultures have had plenty of opportunity to experience something like same-sex sexual desire or same-sex sexual behavior. And so that's what I would say on the first hand. And then on the other hand, I would say, and I do this in my book, I try to desexualize the concept of orientation because I think it has been too highly sexualized. I think that we are taking too many of our marching orders from Freud when we put sexuality at the center of orientation. And so what I do is I put the perception and admiration of personal beauty at the center of orientation, so that when I say I am gay or I have a gay orientation, I'm not saying fundamentally that the core part of that is that I experience sexual desire towards men. What I'm saying is that I notice and I'm drawn to and I want to be around personal beauty in other men. And so for me, that doesn't mean that sexuality never has anything to do with it. We're sexual beings.
Yeah.
Sexuality touches lots of aspects of our daily life and our mental life and those kinds of things. So at some point, sexuality inevitably becomes entwined with it. But what I want to do is push back against the neo-Freudians who want to say that it is at its root
right.
a sexual phenomenon.
Yeah, well, Freud Freud really bears most of the blame, in my mind, for the messed up culture in which we live. I mean, a lot of our categories, even without realizing, are Freudian categories. When you talk about I'm repressed, I mean, all of that is nonsense, but people have just swallowed it as though it's true.
Sure. So I totally agree with that. But I think that what's important, though, is not to throw away the idea of these categories or the phenomenon these categories are trying to name. And so I do think that a fairly recent, I don't know if you want to call it discovery, or it's not really a discovery because people in the ancient times talked about individuals who were predisposed towards this or that, quote, orientation without using that word. But I do think that there is something behind the phenomenon of orientation that we need to think Christianly about. And that's what I try to do in part two of my book, is think Christianly about the concept of orientation. I critique it for its Freudian sexual roots, but then I say, well, what can we as Christians put positively in its place to describe the phenomenon of orientation? Why is it that the vast majority of people are inclined towards personal beauty in the opposite sex, whereas some small minority are not? And another small minority are equally inclined,
right?
You mentioned bisexual. That I describe what I would imagine a bi orientation as someone who can experience indiscriminate yearning and desire for beauty in both sexes.
Yeah.
That's just not me.
Yeah.
I don't experience that.
We're going to be right back, folks. We're talking about the very important subject of faith, gender, and sexuality. We're speaking with Nate Collins. The book is All But Invisible. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Victoria Hearst. My family's company, the Hearst Corporation, publishes a magazine aimed at young women called Cosmopolitan. Nicknamed Cosmo, it contains pornography that hurts kids. I oppose this and have asked the Hearst Corporation Board of Directors many times to label Cosmopolitan adult material so that it cannot be sold to anyone under 18. But the company has refused to do it. So now I have a campaign called Cosmo Hurts Kids. I'm working with legislators, law enforcement, and community groups to have all U.S. states' material harmful to minors laws enforced against Cosmo so that it cannot be sold to your kids. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation says Cosmopolitan magazine contains pornography and is harmful to minors. American Psychological Association studies prove that early exposure to sexualization has significant negative mental health consequences for underage girls. My website is CosmoHurtsKids.com. CosmoHurtsKids.com.
Today. Oh, no, no. From director Clint Eastwood.
Something would have happened right now. Would you know what to do?
Based on the true story of the attack on the 1517 train to Paris.
Would you know how to act? Would you act?
Portrayed by the actual heroes who lived it.
You ever just feel like life is just pushing us towards something, some greater purpose?
The 1517 to Paris, directed by Clint Eastwood. Rated PG-13, now playing.
Mom, what company did you use for your new blinds?
We used Blinds.com. Easy and affordable. Plus, they'll send you free samples, and every order gets free shipping.
Wow, okay.
They even remade our blinds for free because we didn't measure correctly the first time.
Perfect. Thanks, Mom. Smiley face.
Now through February 15th, go to Blinds.com/shutters for a guaranteed 20% off right now. Blinds.com/shutters. Rules and restrictions apply.
Are you a responsible person who finds yourself growing deeper and deeper in credit card debt and you're not sure how to fix the problem? Then get ready for a toll-free number that will put you on a path to financial recovery. Trinity Debt Management is a nonprofit organization that will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, put a stop to late fees and over-limit charges, and reduce your interest rates by as much as 60%. You'll save thousands and become debt-free for keeps. It's not a loan. It's a smart way to relieve your stress, meet your obligations, and preserve your self-respect. If your debt has you down, we should talk. Gather up your bills and call this toll-free number for a free, no-obligation debt analysis. 1-800-990-6976. That's 1-800-990-6976. If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-990-6976.
Do you know that a recent politician once asked, "I've wondered at times what the Ten Commandments would have looked like if Moses had run them through the U.S. Congress." That's a quote from Ronald Reagan, of course. He showed us through his life, his faith, and with his words that Judeo-Christian values and principles still matter. You can help spread the legacy of Ronald Reagan, and you can do it by getting a Reagan email address. Right now, if you have a Gmail, AOL, Yahoo, or other big tech company email address, you help them market their services with every email you send. In return, they scan your emails and target you with unwanted advertising. Now, thanks to our sponsor, ReaganPrivacy.com, you can instead share the Reagan name with every email you send, and they won't scan your emails. They will leave you alone. Get an email address you'll be proud to own at ReaganPrivacy.com. Your very own personal private email address is available to you at ReaganPrivacy.com. Go get your Reagan email address right now at ReaganPrivacy.com.
Oh, she's a big
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. And I'm speaking with Nate Collins. He's got a new book out called All But Invisible, Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. Nate, I don't know how comfortable you are talking about your own story, but I think most of my listeners are fascinated with the idea that you're somebody that's same-sex attracted. You chose to get married to a woman, to have kids. You know, that's an extraordinary thing. We rarely, in the context of the culture in which we live, rarely hear those stories. It's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because there's so many people that don't think that's possible. They sort of think that, you know, whatever you feel, you've got to go with your feelings. And that's, again, that's another one of the lies that's so prevalent in the culture. Did you at some point make this decision, or were you just raised this way? What can you say about your own development along those lines?
Yeah, so I think what I would want to say first is just preface whatever I'm about to say with just the recognition that, that gay people are very diverse. And there's lots of different ways that gay people think about their future and the way they're going to find relational fulfillment, happiness, community, kinship, and family. For me personally, I always just assumed that I would somehow get married. It was kind of maybe an idealistic assumption of mine, but I thought, you know, if I just meet the right woman, anything's possible. And so for me, that's exactly what happened. My wife and I met in Bible college, and she was somebody that I immediately felt drawn to as a person, not because of her outward appearance or the fact that she was a woman, but just who she was as a person. And as we got to know each other, I began realizing that I could see myself spending my future with her. And we eventually began dating. And the sort of romantic feelings, just the idea of thinking of being emotionally intimate with her became very appealing. And I began initiating those kinds of conversations, and she responded well. I eventually told her about my orientation and how, you know, it was confusing, the fact that I had that orientation, yet I was still interested in having a relationship with her in that way. You know, and we grew through it. And it was one of those journeys that eventually led to marriage and to a very happy and fulfilling marriage. But again, that's my story. That's not every gay peaceful person's story. And I would say that's probably not the majority of gay person's stories. Most gay people don't really want to get married to an opposite sex partner. They imagine that kind of the same way that a straight person would imagine, you know, the idea of being intimate with another person of the same gender. It's just that ew feeling, that gross feeling. But for me, it was something that developed very naturally as I got to know my wife and as we were emotionally vulnerable with each other and spiritually vulnerable and dreaming about the future. So, yeah, and stories like mine aren't that uncommon. They're just not heard. They're not visible very much. And the other reason that I hesitate to talk about it is because it has been, gay people experience the stories like mine, but I can, as sort of an expectation. Well, if Nate can do it and if other people can do it, why can't I do it? And that's a very fatalistic, negative outlook on life that conservative Christians have put on gay people by default, by not talking about it, by not learning from the way that gay people experience desires for intimacy and kinship and family. So it is a very touchy thing for me to talk about. I generally don't go to churches and share my story. If people ask me to, I generally say, well, let's find someone who's probably going to be more of your typical celibate gay person to come and share testimony about what God's teaching him in his life or her life, and not necessarily someone like me who has the, quote, storybook ending that we all want. That we're all taught to want, at least.
Well, I mean, at the same time, I would say that it's important that people know that people like you exist, because I think that sometimes we become limited by what we hear. I mean, it's inevitable. And when you hear these stories, because I have friends that were in the gay lifestyle and then they got married and they have kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of them are still same-sex attracted, some are not. But we need to know that there are all kinds of possibilities that are out there, because I think there's so many people whose sexuality is complicated, that they have been attracted to women, but they don't know. I mean, many of my friends from college that are now in the gay lifestyle, they were definitely attracted to women. They wanted to get married. It didn't work out that way, and they made a choice. But I guess I wonder then if you were a conservative evangelical, if you think you hadn't met your wife, do you think you would be celibate, or is that something that you just don't even think about?
Oh, no, I think about that every once in a while. Yeah, I think I would definitely be celibate. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those, you know, big what-if questions that you don't really think about too deeply.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to believe that I would have chosen that path of celibacy and found whatever way, whatever form of family that God could provide for me through that. Because that's what I hold out
right.
for all of my single celibate gay friends.
Right, like, right.
I tell them, like, I have a family. I chose to pursue marriage with my wife. But if you don't feel that, then you have to be celibate. And that's a hard road to walk. But we want to – that's why it's important for me to point out that stories like mine aren't very – they're not the most common
right.
Path of obedience. And so for that reason – I want to make sure that we're doing all the work that we can as a church, as local faith communities, to provide support, to provide family to people who will not choose to pursue opposite sex marriage.
Okay, and that's a huge part of your book and your message is that you say that because
it
we're
is.
Not thinking about this correctly, we're denying emotional intimacy that is properly a part of friendship. To people who are same-sex attracted, and that's really important that the church get that and do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%. That's the relational needs that LGBT people have are at their core no different from what straight people have. They just have less opportunity to get them filled. For a variety of reasons, there's stigma attached to same-sex intimacy, particularly with someone who would say that they're same-sex attracted or gay. There's stigmas and stereotypes about LGBT people in conservative churches. There's gay jokes told from the pulpit. There's, you name it. There's lots and lots of signals that are sent to gender and sexual minorities in conservative churches that their stories aren't welcome, that they are not welcome if they chose to be more known. Lot of those things are just they're fueled by ignorance and by people who don't actually know a gay person
right.
or have taken time to get to know a gay person and heard about their desires for intimacy and relationship, community. These are all big things that I think the conservative evangelical church has a really big opportunity to learn.
Is it because of the term gay? Because I wasn't aware of this, but I guess speaking to Christopher Yuan or Rosaria Butterfield, I can't remember, but they were saying that they don't buy the idea that Christians should label themselves as gay if they're same sex attracted, and that there's some kind of difference of opinion on that specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there definitely is. It can be an intense intramural debate at times. For me, it language morphs and changes. And for what gay meant to one generation, it means something related, but still significantly different, I would assume, from what it means to current generations. And so all I'm trying to do is communicate that this is an orientation that I have. I haven't spoken with Christopher Rosario in a while, but I think both of them resist the word orientation itself. And I just don't see that as very helpful. I think the orientation is naming a phenomenon that's real. And if it's a phenomenon that's real, then as Christians, we have a responsibility to think theologically about it. I mean, the word Trinity is not in the Bible, but I mean, how much ink has been spilled thinking theologically about what Trinity is? And we use that word. So, I think there's a good case to be made for thinking theologically about what orientation is. And if we're doing that, then if the culture has a word that labels an orientation, I think it's helpful to use that.
Right.
And then just clarify in conversation what we mean by that.
I think a lot of times the uncomfortableness that people in conservative churches may have, which certainly stems from ignorance, but I think that they think that to acknowledge same-sex attraction, to acknowledge that people have this, as a part of their lives – is almost to say that it's okay. In other words, they need that line really clear, and they're uncomfortable with saying, yes, you can be same-sex attracted, but you choose to live in a biblical way,
sure.
which is to say in a celibate lifestyle or something. I think a lot of people, they don't get that, or they're themselves just so uncomfortable with the concept, which is another reason I wanted to talk to you about it, because I think that we shouldn't be uncomfortable with it. We're all broken. We're all messed up. We're all sinners. The only question is how. And let's, you know, love each other where we are. We're going to be right back, folks. I'm talking to Nate Collins. The book is All But Invisible. We'll be right back.
On February 16th, from PureFlix.
Samson, chosen by the living God.
A hero will rise.
He has the strength of a god. I saw it with my own eyes.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 16th. For tickets and information, go to samson.movie.
For unhappy timeshare owners, getting out is important, and with maintenance bills taking a bite out of your savings, now is the right time to call Lone Star Transfer to improve your financial situation. They've helped over 5,000 people get out of their timeshares quickly, legally, and ethically with a 99% success rate and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Let them help you. Call toll-free 855-551-7066, 855-551-7066 for a no-obligation consultation, or visit them online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
Hi, this is Rhett Rasmussen of BestHotGrill.com. Just because it's cold outside, it doesn't mean you need to stop grilling, not if you've got the right grill, and that would be a Solaire infrared grill. Solaire infrared grills perform equally well in the cold of winter as in the heat of summer. Just like you feel warm from the sun when you step out of the shadows, the Solaire infrared burners heat your food directly, not the air around the food like conventional grills do. The intense heat also results in the juiciest food you will ever taste from a grill, gas, charcoal, or otherwise. To get the great taste, it's all about the heat. And Solaire Infrared from BestHotGrill.com gets hotter than anything you've ever experienced. Try it yourself with the Solaire Demo Program. Solaire is truly the last grill you'll ever buy. Learn more about these amazing USA-made grills at BestHotGrill.com. That's BestHotGrill.com, BestHotGrill.com.
Taxes show. We're talking to Nate Collins about his book, All But Invisible, Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. Nate, I ought to have asked you this up front. The title of the book, All But Invisible, what do you mean to communicate with that?
Well, the title is meant to point out that it's sort of a double entendre. Like, right now, gay people in conservative evangelical churches are all but invisible. We don't really acknowledge that they're there. We certainly talk about LGBT issues as though there's nobody in the audience or in the congregation that would relate on a personal level to what's being discussed. So there's that sense, but there's also the sense of what I would like things to look like, the way I would like to see the sea change, the tide change, and that is that we become all but invisible, where we're cherished and visible members of our faith communities, and we're known. We're known for the various parts of our lives that affect the way we experience ourselves and that form our identity in ways. And so that's what I mean by all but invisible. We're all but invisible right now, but I really want us to become very much not invisible.
Right. And so what would you say to people? I mean, I'm sure there are tons of people who listen to this program who are – they're uncomfortable with the subject. Maybe they were raised that this is something you don't talk about, and that by talking about it, maybe you're normalizing the behavior. They're thinking of the behavior and the orientation simultaneously. They're conflating the idea.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I mean, it is difficult and it is uncomfortable. I want to validate that and say that yes, for a variety of reasons, the topic of human sexuality in general, but also LGBT issues and orientation, it makes people queasy. The other side of the coin, though, is that these are real people's lives, and I don't think it's possible in our culture today to be a compassionate gospel witness to everybody without wrestling with the experience of LGBT people and the way they experience their gender and their sexuality. And if we're going to take the gospel to that community outside the church, let alone the community of sexual and gender minorities that are already in our pews, then we have to learn how they experience life, specifically as it relates to their orientation and all the kinds of things that are wrapped up in that, things that are very central to what it means to flourish as a human being created to flourish in community. And so I would appeal to those individuals to recognize, yes, we're being called in lots of ways, not just this issue, but gospel calls us in lots of ways to step out of comfort zones. And I think this is one comfort zone that we're sort of being shoved out of if we're willing to be shoved and go along with it.
It is such a thorny issue. I was thinking just recently, Father James Martin in the Catholic world seems to be sending very mixed, confusing signals on the on these issues. I don't know if you're familiar with that controversy, but I've had a friend on this radio program, really, really upset that here you have somebody who claims, in a way, to want to reach out in love to LGBTQ people, but seems to be sending this mixed message that to be living in that sexual lifestyle is okay or something. In other words, I think part of the confusion with this issue is that people mm-hmm. want to be really clear on, what's sure. right and what's wrong, and that a lot of times that is confused. So I think sometimes people maybe take a harder line than they need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why it's important for people like me and others who are sort of pushing this conversation along gently, hopefully, just to make it clear that I am 100% sold out and committed to the traditional, historic Christian sexual ethic. I believe that marriage is defined in the Bible as between a man and a woman, and that the government can call something anything a marriage. It doesn't make it a marriage. And so I am 100% committed to that. And that's important for me to let people know. Mm. That's, for me, that's the historic Christian sexual ethic. But that alone is not a fully orbed Christian sexual ethic.
Right.
A fully orbed Christian sexual ethic is going to be livable and to be compelling for everybody. And right now, the conversation that happens in most evangelical churches does not feel compelling to a certain segment of the population, and that's those who aren't straight. Because all it's telling them is don't have gay sex. Avoid all intimacy with same gender people that you might be attracted to at all costs because you might sin. And you might find support in a family, but good luck. Like, that's basically all it is.
Right.
And so that's not heard as compelling. And the gospel is compelling. It has to be compelling. And so for that reason, we need to push the conversation forward in ways that make the gospel more compelling, that shine light into the beauty of the provision that Christ gives us in his church, in the community, in spiritual family, ultimately, I believe.
I can't imagine that there are too many people like you living where you live in this intersection, as you put it, of faith, gender, and sexuality, especially as it's a rare thing, or that those who are maybe are more quiet. So I'm just thrilled you've written this book and are talking about it. We're going to be right back, folks, to continue the conversation with Nate Collins. The book is All But Invisible. We'll be right back. Hey, Albin.
Hey, Eric.
Albin, are you skeptical when somebody says something could help
Sometimes,
you?
Sometimes, yeah, sure.
Well, me too. Relief Factor.
Yes.
As you know, we advertise Relief Factor on this program. I was initially skeptical. I thought, they want me to advertise something. I don't know. Does it work? So I started to take it, right?
Okay.
And my acne cleared up. No, that's not true. But the fact is that I have had pain because I run, okay? And even though I was skeptical, I tried it. And you have to try it for 2 to 3 weeks in case – sometimes it works right away. But there are four different chemicals or chemicals, whatever they are, active ingredients. And sometimes they take longer. But for me, it worked, and it's why I take it. If you have any aches and pains, folks, I challenge you to try it. It's $19.95. It's very little. And I think I can go out on a limb and say it probably will work. If you have any kind of aches, but it doesn't have to be like searing, horrible pain. But if you have some kind of, you know, arthritic stuff, I would try it. You go to relieffactor.com, $19.95 for the quick start pack, relieffactor.com.
On February 16th, from PureFlix.
Samson, chosen by the living God.
A hero will rise.
He has the strength of a god. I saw it with my own eyes.
My name is Samson, and you will face the wrath of God.
Samson, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 16th. For tickets and information, go to samson.movie.
You like freedom? I do. You like money? Well, I do too. If you like freedom and money, then you're going to love Freedom Checks. You see, over the next few months, an estimated $34.6 billion is up for grabs to anyone who stakes their claim. Yep, you heard that right, $34.6 billion. To get all the details, just go to www.claimfreedomchecks.com. Thousands of people are already lined up to cash in. Take Doug, for example. He's a 46-year-old from Joplin, Missouri, who's set to get a check for $24,075. And if Doug can do this, I've got a hunch that you can too. But here's the thing. If you want the chance to grab your full fair share of this $34.6 billion payout, you must have your ducks in a row by March 1st. So don't wait. Get over to www.claimfreedomchecks.com before the March 1st deadline. That's www.claimfreedomchecks.com.
Spearfishing has or will strike your business, wreaking havoc on your employees, brand, and your bottom line. Spearfishing can't be stopped by traditional email security solutions because messages appear to be legitimate from your boss, a trusted colleague, or a vendor asking you to wire money, confirm login credentials, or worse. Barracuda Sentinel is artificial intelligence for real-time spear phishing and cyber fraud defense. Reclaim your email in minutes with zero impact on network performance. Visit barracuda.com/AI.
Like all of you, I've been hearing a bunch of good things about MyPillow, and I was skeptical that it is as great as everybody says. Larry Elder here. Well, I received my first MyPillow months ago, and I love it. My brother loves his, and my friends to whom I've given them, well, they're not giving them back. And Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, has a very special offer for Larry Elder listeners. Get this. MyPillow is now offering 50% off the 4-pack, which includes 2 premium pillows and 2 go-anywhere pillows. If you're looking for a great night's sleep now, now is the perfect time to get your first MyPillow. And if you already know how great MyPillow is, why not give them for everybody you know? Call 800-890-1843, use promo code Larry, or go to MyPillow.com. Again, make sure you use the promo code Larry. 800-890-1843, 800-890-1843, 800-890-1843. Make sure you use promo code Larry. 800-890-1843, promo code Larry.
Oh, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. Honey, oh, sugar, sugar, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you.
Hey there, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. A little sugary pop there for you. But now we're going to go back to something a little bit more serious, the issue of sexuality in our time. We're talking to Nate Collins. His book is All But Invisible, Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. Part of your argument, Nate, has to do with beauty. And there's a part of your book you talk about the power of beauty. And you say that intimacy is pleasurable because beauty is captivating. Talk a little bit about beauty. That's not something people typically philosophize about.
Sure. I mean, so the reason I spend so much time in a couple of chapters, or at least one in particular, talking about beauty is because it's important for me to find out what is at the core or the root, or perhaps more central than we've thought about, of orientation. And, you know, we talked earlier about how, you know, the typical Freudian response is, you know, sexuality is at the core. Sexuality drives everything we do, all of our drive towards intimacy. And I just don't see that as biblical.
Let me tell you what it is. It's a lie.
It is.
Like, you're very kind. You're very kind and moderate in saying, I don't see it as biblical. It's not biblical, and it's a pernicious lie.
The reason I just want to speak, you know, like that about it, because there's a lot of Christians, I mean, well-respected Christians, who aren't, you know, theologians, and they're well-meaning, and they do a lot of good work, and they still talk about sexual orientation. And I don't want to criticize that unduly. Like, it takes time for conversations to change. And so I just want to say, you know what, let's try and think more explicitly Christian about orientation and what possibly could it be besides sexual. And so that's all I'm trying. I agree.
But that's a big idea, and it's a powerful idea.
I think it is.
And I think you're onto something. You're onto something huge. That's very interesting.
Well, I hope so, because I see beauty in the fact that we're created to be worshiping beings as pretty important to the biblical narrative about what it means to be human. And so for me, that means that I need to figure out how beauty fits into my desires, is particularly specific my desires that are directed towards other men. And, you know, we talked earlier about just how, you know, difficult people find it to wrap their minds around a Christian who would say they're gay, because that seems to, like, tie your sense of self or your identity too closely to sin or temptation or a pattern of sin and temptation. I hear that a lot. And, you know, I think that critique sort of melts away a little bit if we take sexuality out of the center of it and put beauty. Because for me, my orientation, my gay, same-sex orientation, if it's redeemed, like I believe all of me has to be redeemed, then that means that I should be able to experience being drawn to the beauty of another person who is a man in a chaste and God-honoring way, but in a way that's different from a straight person, because a straight person does that without the context of this gay orientation. And so for me, that means I have a positive vocation. I have a way of experiencing my orientation that I can look at through a redeemed lens, and I can see as somehow being made new and being made good. And so that's why it's important for me to say, look, I think beauty really does need to be how we think about this. At least, you know, this is not the last word. I'm not trying to say that I've, you know, arrived and this is what orientation is. This is a conversation I think we need to be having. But I do think that beauty should figure into the conversation. And I think it's important, especially because it does correlate so much with what we know is biblical about being human and being created to be worshiping beings.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's a big idea and it's very deep, and this is something you've written a whole book about. So you've thought about this very deeply, and I don't imagine that there are many other people thinking about it from your perspective in the way that you're thinking about it. I mean, I not that I would know probably, but it doesn't seem that I've seen anything like this.
Well, and I think it's translatable to straight individuals, people who have straight orientations, because beauty figures into the way that they perceive the opposite sex. And if that's the case, then a lot of this relates to the way that, you know, the age-old question, can men and women be friends, you know? I think in evangelical circles, the Billy Graham rule and things like that has sort of put a damper on opposite-sex friendships. And so the idea that it might just be about beauty and not sex, I think that could open the door.
I think you're right. I just think that, you know, I've differed with my friend Karen Swallow Pryor on this issue. Like, I think that the Billy Graham, Mike Pence rule is a good rule. But I mean, look, I see both sides of it.
Sure,
what I
sure.
find very interesting in what you're saying is I think that because we're living in such a sexualized culture, and I touched on this in our first segment, that I mean, I remember being pre-sexual and yet falling in love with a beautiful woman and realizing that as years pass, that becomes less and less possible, that sexuality, in a way, it's like backwash. It goes back into all of our feelings toward beauty, and those kinds of attractions become sexualized because the culture is sexualized, because we become sexualized. And yet there is something beautiful when you think about God's first plan for us. the idea of a young man and a young woman appreciating each other in with that, you know, maybe it's puppy love. Puppy love is not sexual unless you've been sexualized early on. And there something, but because the culture is so sexualized, it's very hard for us. We have to make a huge effort to get back there and to remember that that's possible.
I think if you're going to say that, though, that you know, it cuts both ways so that we have a church today that doesn't really know what sense to make of a text like 1 Corinthians 7 where Paul elevates celibacy and the celibate state over marriage. It says, if you can, be like I am. And so I would say that in a sense, the church has become so sexualized, so nuclear family centered, so marriage centered, to perhaps be a little too edgy,
right?
That we are neglecting a text in the scripture that makes fairly clear that the celibate state is a very honored state, a very highly esteemed state. And if that's the case, then you have to ask the question why, and I believe it's the same thing you just pointed out, the highly sexualized culture. Well, here the highly sexualized culture is working against interpreting a text rightly, and in doing so, making it difficult for LGBT people to thrive.
Yeah, well, you're making some wonderful points. Folks, I'm very happy to be talking to Nate Collins. The book is All But Invisible. We'll be right back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
It starts to rain.
I'm Victoria Hearst. My family's company, the Hearst Corporation, publishes a magazine aimed at young women called Cosmopolitan. Nicknamed Cosmo, it contains pornography that hurts kids. I oppose this and have asked the Hearst Corporation Board of Directors many times to label Cosmopolitan adult material so that it cannot be sold to anyone under 18. But the company has refused to do it. So now I have a campaign called Cosmo Hurts Kids. I'm working with legislators, law enforcement, and community groups to have all U.S. states' material harmful to minors laws enforced against Cosmo so that it cannot be sold to your kids. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation says Cosmopolitan magazine contains pornography and is harmful to minors. American Psychological Association studies prove that early exposure to sexualization has significant negative mental health consequences for underage girls. My website is CosmoHurtsKids.com. CosmoHurtsKids.com.
Mike Gallagher here again for one of my all-time, and I mean all-time, favorite sponsors, ReliefFactor.com. My story is simple. I had a hip replaced, then I had a motorcycle accident that left me in pain, who simply wouldn't go away until I started taking Relief Factor. A three-week quick start is just $19.95. 80% of people who do order the three-week quick start go on to order more, like me. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or give them a call. 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com.
I'm Jay Farner from Quicken Loans. The rate today on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.125%, APR 4.36%. But choosing the right mortgage lender involves so much more than just a rate. We've earned 12 J.D. Power Awards for client satisfaction. And we invented Rocket Mortgage, a simpler, hassle-free way to get a mortgage completely online. So choose Quicken Loans, America's number one online lender. Call 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Equal housing lender. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Folks, this is Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking to Nate Collins. The book is All But Invisible, Exploring Identity Questions at the Intersection of Faith, Gender, and Sexuality. Nate, we just have a few minutes left, but what you were saying earlier is that in some ways the church can over-focus on marriage and, and family at the expense of giving celibacy or a life of celibacy the dignity and honor that the scripture seems to give it. How do you... how do we get around that? Because we've always had, you know, people are just trying to live their lives. And what do you think, what would it look like if we were to, you know, honor celibacy more?
Well, I mean, I guess I just want to say first that you know, it's understandable for me in a really important way that, you know, why the church today is so focused on marriage, and that's because we're seeing it as an institution just crumble in front of us. And so, and it is a good and holy thing. It reflects the, you know, Christ and his church. And so it's important to talk about it. The difficulty is that for a lot of celibate gay people in conservative evangelical churches, when that is the only thing that's talked about, and the concepts of celibacy and the patterns of living that celibacy are implicated by celibacy are not talked about, or not fleshed out, or not even viewed as options that someone might legitimately want to take, that absence of conversation makes conversations about marriage that are important almost feel triggering in a sense, so that people tend to retreat. And
no one has ever used the word triggering. No one's ever used the word triggering on this show unironically. I want to thank you.
I was wondering, is that okay to use that word in this
show? Yeah, no, it's kind of funny, though, because what you're saying, Rosaria Butterfield has said the same thing on this program, that people who are same-sex attracted are not called to become heterosexuals. They're called to follow Jesus, and there's a difference. Follow Jesus and still be same-sex attracted, and that is an important point to be made, and it's one of the points you're making.
Yeah, and so if that's the case, if they're called to follow Jesus just in a state of celibacy, then our job as the church is to make that livable for them. And some of the most meaningful ways we can make that livable are providing community, providing opportunities for individuals to live out their lives in families, if not nuclear families, then spiritual families, where we welcome LGBT people into our homes, and whether it's to live with us as roommates or to stop by every Sunday night.
Right. And I would go farther and say that goes for anybody who is single, right? In other words, there are plenty of people that are heterosexually oriented, and yet they're longing for connection and family, and maybe they couldn't get married. Maybe it didn't work out. That ought not to be the only way to experience these things.
So here's the main difference. I mean, single people in general, disparate impact, right, of single celibacy and solitude. But here's the difference. So with LGBT people, with single people, there's always the prospect, the hope that they'll meet the right person.
Right.
Right? That marriage will eventually happen. And, you know, the older you get, the less you're able to anticipate that.
Right.
So you don't really know what to do with that. But imagine you're a 12-year-old boy or girl and realize, you know, I don't think I'm straight, and I'm going to a conservative evangelical church that says that I'm not supposed to have sex outside of marriage. You have this kid, really, from a very early age.
Absolutely.
We're trying to figure out who they are.
Forgive me, Nate. We're out of time, Nate. Forgive me, but I think the point is made.
Worries.
A very, very wonderful point.
Yes.
Thanks for being my guest, folks. Please pick up a copy, All But Invisible. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Nate, once again, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Eric. Pleasure to be with you.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.